her expert advice anytime at thinkblink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays here 12 to 2 for football season on News Talk WSB. So glad to have you here. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. When you're there, sign up for the free weekly newsletter. 7 minutes past the hour, the lines are wide open. So much to talk about today. Yesterday, hundreds of people, 700 people, were arrested on the Brooklyn Bridge during a protest against Wall Street. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. That was a really interesting development. We saw the stock market dive at the end of the day. It had been down all day on Friday. We have ended the week at 10,913, it was a wild week that saw us get all the way up, I want to say, to 11,003, and now we're back at 10,009. We were up 141 points on the week, but wow, more big swings, and we'll talk about what's going on there as well. Where I want to start out today, though, is the Bank of America announcement that it is going to start charging you, if you have a Bank of America debit card, $5 a month if you use that debit card. What's going on? Well, last week the swipe fee law went into effect. It's cutting in half the amount the banks can charge each time you use your little plastic debit card. And this is supposed to help merchants, but it's not helping the banks. And so the banks are out looking for blood, as the New York Post put it. They are looking to try and figure out how to get around the overdraft fees that there's now a limit on. They're trying to look for other kinds of fees. And they're basically trying to raise revenue. Bank of America is in kind of a tight spot right now. So the debit amount, the debit charge, which is sort of interesting, if you use your card, you will be charged a $5 fee. Whether you make one purchase a month, that's a pretty hefty tax, or 20 or 40 or 2,000, it doesn't really matter. And it doesn't matter if you select debit or credit at the point of sale. It just matters what the card is tied to. Now, if you don't use your card at all, you won't be charged a fee. You can use the ATM as much as you want without getting hit with the new charge. And customers with certain premium accounts will be exempt from the charge. Still, there are 38.7 million people who carry these cards, and most of them will have to pay the fee. So it's going to depend what goes on. And consumers, meaning you, will have to figure out whether this is worth it or not. Or is there some other way to do it? Because $5 a month is a $60 a year fee. And you can get a credit card that's not going to charge you $60 a month or $60 a year. And at least you're buying yourself some time to do it. Now, what about the other banks? Because some people are simply going to switch. They're going to go from Bank of America, maybe to Chase, maybe to Wells Fargo. Well, debit cards are also being looked at and the fees that they can put on by Wells Fargo and Chase. So they are already engaging in pilot programs where they're charging $3 a month to consumers who are using their debit cards. Let's see what else there are, because one other thing that's sort of interesting is this concern that the free checking account is going away. So 2 years ago, 76% of banks were offering free checking. Now only 45% of banks are offering. 60% of banks, or 60% of checking accounts are carrying fees and or mandatory minimum balances, according to Bankrate's study last year. Citibank has upped its monthly basic checking charge from $8 to $10. Bank of America and TD Bank have or soon will introduce known minimum accounts carrying monthly charges between $3.99 and $9. So Bank of America has $6 to $9 a month for basic checking with no minimum balance. That's at the moment. $5 a month for the debit fees. At ATM fees, $2 at non-Bank of America ATMs, $3 for non-BOA customers. Citibank has basic checking at $10 a month if you're below a $1,500 minimum. No charge for debit fees. Same kind of ATM fees. Chase $12 a month if you're below the $1,500 minimum for the basic checking, $3 a month for the debit fees. The ATM fees are the same. Wells Fargo, basic checking is $5 a month or $60 a year if you're below the $1,500 a month minimum. Debit fees are $3 a month, being tested some elsewhere, I guess. And ATM fees are $2.50 at non-Wells Fargo ATMs, $3 for non-Wells Fargo customers. So it goes on and on. I mean, the banks are clearly trying to recoup these fees, and now we have to figure out what you're going to do. Because if you're addicted to your debit card and you're, let's say, a Dave Ramsey follower where you don't believe in using credit at all, or maybe you don't even have any credit cards, right? What are you going to do? Because I think a $60 a year tax to use your own cash seems a little steep. I really do. So are you now going to just withdraw money and run around using cash? Are you going to write checks again? Checks have fallen out of favor now that people are using debit cards again. Are we going to go back to using checks, credit, real cash, you know, the green stuff? So many interesting choices to try and figure out how to get around these kinds of fees. And it'll be really interesting to see what happens if everybody starts to switch around. Now, best place to go for really true free checking is probably a local or a regional bank where you can go. You're not earning any money on your savings or your $1,500 that's in there, if there are minimums at all. But credit unions tend to have better opportunities. Local banks, regional banks, they've been hit hard. They're looking to attract deposits. They're going to be competing against the mega banks. It's a big pain in the neck to change everything that's sort of automatically paid out of those accounts, you know, or direct deposited. But, you know, if you want to save some money, and it sounds like it's going to be significant money coming down the line, you know, I don't know. $60 a year seems like a hefty price to pay. You may want to start shopping around to some other banks. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So what's going on with the stock market? Because what we saw this week was huge, wacky stuff going on. Eastman Kodak shares were crushed this past week. Investors were selling. It finally said on Friday it had no intention to file for bankruptcy, was exploring all options. Meanwhile, the stock fell by almost 70% to 78 cents. It's the lowest price it's been at since the 50s. Talk about, I mean, an old, fabulous name, Eastman Kodak, absolutely going down the pike. I got an email from somebody who is another financial guru type, who says he's almost but certain that Eastman Kodak will file for bankruptcy this week. I think that was really weighing on things. And then we saw U.S. mortgages sink to another record low this week. Have you refinanced? Can you refinance? This is something to think about as well. We also saw this week kind of a surprise that Berkshire Hathaway, that's Warren Buffett's company, has announced a plan to buy back stock at prices of up to 110% of wherever it currently is in the marketplace. That was sort of interesting. They have a whole lot of cash on hand. But really, really interesting moves due, I think, mostly to what's going on with Europe. So last week we talked about how Europe had finally started talking about a $1 trillion rescue. Last Sunday there was an article in the London Telegraph about how the number that was really being bandied about was 1.7 trillion pounds, which works out to be about, I don't know, $2.5 to $3 trillion, excuse me. And now we're seeing numbers go back to, oh, it's just going to be $600 million. Every single report I saw this week said $600 million just isn't going to cut it. All we're doing is kicking the can down a few months. It's just not the way to do it, folks. There really needs to be a very, very big number for Europe. And whatever happens in Europe is going to have a dramatic effect to what's happening here. And then another little piece of news that we'll follow up on as well is that there's at least one organization that has now said that last quarter, we just ended a quarter, September 30th, third quarter of the year, that we have entered another recession or about to enter one this quarter. And whatever happens in Europe is certainly going to have a pretty decent size effect on what's going on, you know, with the American economy. So lots of things to watch and talk about. And we don't have what's going on in Asia yet, but the Asian markets will open up in a few hours. And certainly there's big concern over there as well, as China's growth seems to have slowed. So lots of trouble everywhere in the world. Doesn't make for a healthy stock market. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phone. Suzanne joins us on the line from Griffin. Hi, Suzanne.
Yes, I wanted to ask you, enjoy your show. Always
thank you.
Do. But I may need to move my parents into my husband and mine's household, which will mean that we're going to have to purchase a larger home.
Okay.
It's something that's come up unexpected. Now, my parents would be putting some of the money into the house, and I did not know how we should do this so that we would not have, my husband and I wouldn't have to pay, you know, just a huge amount of taxes, like if that would be considered as a gift, or we would put the house in all four of our names.
Well, you probably should put, okay, so first of all, when you sell your primary residence now, you don't have to pay, you should not have to pay taxes on it as long as you've lived in it for 2 years.
Right.
Okay, now you're going to go into a new house, and you and your parents can own that property together.
Mm-hmm.
If they put in half, if they put in a third, you can arrange the ownership, the title, to reflect the percentages that they have. And then you're not getting a gift from them. You're just buying it in. Now, if they want to gift it to you over time, or you want to purchase their equity in the property, you can do that.
Well, no, they would just gift it to us.
They would gift it to you, right, but to avoid any tax consequences, you'd want to gift over a period of years.
Okay.
At a rate of $13,000 a year to you and $13,000 to your husband if you have, do you have children?
No.
Okay, so they could gift it to you at $26,000 a year. I don't know how big a house you're buying, but in Atlanta, prices have gone down quite significantly.
Right.
So maybe you're talking about spending, what, an extra $100,000?
Correct, but now they are 83 and 85, and
okay.
So if they did not live very many years to where this gifting would turn out, I mean, then would there be tax consequences?
No, because you would inherit their share.
Oh, okay.
So are you the only child?
No, there's another one, but I don't believe he would be involved.
Okay, so you just want to make sure their will reflects the fact that you inherit the property,
uh-huh.
And you can buy it as joint tenants with rights of survivorship. So when they die, you get it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then since you're inheriting it, if they fall, they each can pass down, I believe it's $5 million. Clearly, the $100,000 falls within it. So unless they're fabulously wealthy, and I hope for your case they are.
No.
Okay. So they're going to fall under that amount anyway, so there shouldn't be any inheritance taxes to pay. And then you probably, since you'll end up continuing to live in this new house, as long as you live there for another 2 years, it's unlikely that you would have to pay any kind of taxes on that money as well.
Okay, and could I get your opinion? This is something that's come up unexpected, so we may have to actually buy this and our house just be on the market and not sold.
So,
which we can't afford to do that.
You can or cannot?
We can, and I know, but it's not the best idea in the world, but just what is your opinion on that?
Well, I think it's fine. I mean, you do what you have to do for your family.
Okay.
I mean, it's really family first. As long as that was your primary residence when you were, you know, you started to sell it, you can still, you know, continue to make that your primary residence. But even so, you still have, I believe it's as your primary residence for any time in the last 2 years.
Okay.
Right, two years.
Yeah, we've been here 3.5 years.
So you should be just fine.
Okay.
Are you underwater with that house, or are you just fine?
Oh, yeah, we'll lose probably about $30,000.
But you can afford to bring that money to the table.
Yes, uh-huh.
Oh, fine. So you don't
it's paid off.
Oh, okay. So then that's great, because
yeah,
that means there's no mortgage. You don't have to worry about a lender approving a short sale. You just price it, and you price it to sell. Take the loss, move, because remember, you're buying a bigger house at a lower price point.
Yeah.
So you'll make it back on the other side someday, perhaps, but at least you're buying low. You're selling low, but you're buying low.
Yes, okay.
And that's a great way to do it.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Suzanne. Good luck, and I hope your parents are feeling a little better soon. It's 21 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Lines are wide open here on the Elise Glenk Show on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glenk is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glenk Show. 404-872-0750. Carol joins us on the line from Conyers. Hi, Carol.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a insurance policy that was taken out on my grandson when he was about 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And now he is 17, and we were looking at using the cash value of that policy for college, and it just hasn't done anything for us in a while, and I just wondered, would I be better off taking the cash value and getting rid of the policy and just investing that, you know, continuing to pay into it?
I never think that cash, first of all, I don't understand why anybody would do a cash value policy in a two-year-old. I think it's a complete and total waste of money. And look, you haven't done anything. It hasn't done anything for you. So I definitely think you should get rid of it. Get rid of this policy. Stop paying on it. It's just a waste of your money. I think the stock market's going to be very up and down, so I like a very well-diversified portfolio. And anyway, he's going to start next year using it to, you're going to use it to pay for some of his college. And that, by the way, Carol, is going to be your very best investment. But bottom line, get rid of this policy. It's really not helping out. 27 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Talk to you in a bit on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey. And midday every Sunday with Elise Glink on AM 750. And now, 95.5 FM. News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. A little Bruce for you this morning. You look pretty good going into Sting's 60th birthday party. It was great. It must have been a great concert. I hope they filmed it so the rest of us mere mortals can listen in at some point in time. So mortgage interest rates hit another record low this week. This, out of the last 5 or 6 weeks, we've had mortgage interest rates drop to record lows for maybe 4 of the 6 weeks. And it's just absolutely kind of astonishing to me that you are now seeing 30-year rates at about 4%. And the Fed indicated that if the economy continues to stall or actually does go into another recession, which some people think it already has, let alone the fact that the rest of America, those who love us who live on Main Street, feel like it never came out of recession from 2009, they will ease further. I'm not, since they're so close to zero, I'm not sure how that would work. But anyway, mortgage interest rates, long-term rates are going down. And so I decided I would do, on Money Watch this week, I would take a look at the 5 top mistakes you don't want to make when you're considering refinancing. Because at any point along the way, these 5 points can really trip you up, and you're going to sink your refinancing. And it's so hard to refinance these days for most people anyway. You need great credit, a ton of equity in your house. I mean, my husband Sam was joking with our mortgage lender because we're just, you know, in the middle of this refinancing that we can never refinance again because every time we go in, he tells us our house is worth less. We just don't want to hear that anymore. We still have plenty of equity, but who wants to hear that your house has dropped another 10% in value? So what are the 5 mistakes that borrowers make when they're refinancing these days? And a lot of these come to us from LendingTree. So thank you to LendingTree. They're seeing it from the thousands of people who are applying for loans online. Number one mistake is overestimating the value of your house. And, you know, it's good for everybody because just because your house was worth, say, $300,000 7 years ago, doesn't mean it's even worth $200,000 today. Nationally, home prices have fallen more than 30%. Las Vegas, Phoenix, Miami, way more than that. And if you don't have enough equity, you're going to get a higher than expected refinance offer, or you're not going to get one at all. So don't overestimate the value of your house. Number two is hesitating to lock in low rates. So, you know, I don't know how many ways I can say this, but if you are thinking about refinancing, don't wait for the bottom of the market because you'll miss it. It's just like stock market timing. You can't do it. You can't time mortgage interest rates. So let me say it baldly. These are amazing interest rates. If you can get a 4% or 4.5% on a 30-year fixed, it's incredible. You're never going to want to get rid of this property. So lock in. Don't be afraid. Lock in. All right, next thing is mistake, focusing only on interest rates. So remember, when you refinance, interest rate is one piece, but you've got points, fees, loan terms. Look at all the details. Read your documents. Please, read them. And then number four, overlooking shorter-term loans. Now, I am a big fan of the 15-year or the 30-year, but if you're only going to be there 10 years and you can swing a 10-year mortgage payment, you're going to get another cut in the interest rate. You're not going to save any money going for a 20-year over a 30-year because those are priced at about the same. So, but if you're at a 20-year, push yourself to get to the 15-year. And don't overlook a shorter term rate. If you're not even going to stay for 5 years, I mean, the question is it even worthwhile to refinance? But think about it. Different kinds of term loans are available and they carry different prices on them, and you want to get the best that you can. And then finally, the idea that you don't need to read your documents, that there is no knowledge of the documents required to refinance. Probably half the questions I get each week are from people who could answer their own questions if they just looked at their mortgage documents. How do I know if I have an FHA loan? Go ahead and open up your loan packet and take out the loan document and see if it says FHA loan. It's right at the top. How do I know what the interest rate is? Should I refinance? How many years do I have left in my loan? All of these pieces of the puzzle can be figured out if you just look at your documents. So go look at your documents if you're refinancing. For gosh sakes, please read them. Please. And always know where you keep this file. You're going to be going back to it, and you're going to really need to know. Now, according to LendingTree, 1/3 of borrowers have no idea what their current mortgage rate is. 1/3, 33%. Really? Again, go back to the documents. It's going to tell you what's on there. And even if there are 80 or 90 pages, just keep paging through. Eventually, you're going to get to a page that shows you your loan term. To read more on this story and get more details on it, go to moneywatch.com. Click on my name and you'll see the top story. We published it, I think, on Friday. Friday or so. Refinancing the top 5 mistakes you don't want to make. I'll also put a link to it from today's show notes. 41 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Jim joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
I think I might have hit one of your top five. I'm just questioning. I'm 62 years old, and I'm thinking about whether I should refinance or not. I only have 8.5 years left.
Oh, great.
At 6%, though. And I've been, and I can afford what I'm currently paying. That's not an issue. The issue is that sometime in the future, over the next 5 years or whatever, at least by 2015, I may retire.
Okay.
And probably have enough in my, to pay it off. But I'm just trying to figure out, should I, with the rates so low, when is it not advisable to consider refinancing at least at a 10 or 15 year loan?
Did you have a 15-year mortgage or a 30-year?
I had a 15-year.
Okay. So you've paid off about half of this loan. So you have loads of equity, which is great. The question is, how are you going to do if you refinance? What you would want to do is refinance to a 10-year loan, right?
Right.
You want to refinance to a 10-year loan, but pay it off in 8.5 years.
Correct.
So how much is left on your loan?
$108,000.
I'm going to do this for you in real time on eLoan.com because I happen to like it. So I think on a 10-year loan, you can probably get, I'm going to go 3.25%. I think it could be lower. But let's just say 3.25%. We're going to do a 10-year loan, and this does not include your taxes or your insurance. This is just strictly the mortgage rate.
Correct.
So on a 10-year loan, your monthly payment would be $1,055. How much are you paying right now?
Without the P&I?
Yeah, without the property taxes and without the insurance. So if that's what you're referring to, yes.
Yes, twelve. I'm actually paying $1,850, but I'm paying more than I should. So
okay.
I think without the P&I, it's looks like $1,347.
Okay, so you can go from $1,347 to about $1,000 a month. So that's a savings of about $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice savings. But what you're going to want to do is take that and pour it right back into the loan.
Right.
Because you want to pay it off in 8 years.
Correct.
So you can do it. Now the only thing you have to worry about or think about is what kind of fees you're going to have to pay to get there. So do you, I'm sure you don't have an FHA loan. I'm sure you got a conventional 15-year loan.
Conventional, correct.
Right. So you're going to have to refinance. So if they charge you $4,000 to refinance, is it still going to be worth it? And how much are you going to save? And I think it's perfectly acceptable and reasonable to go and have this conversation with your lender or with a different mortgage broker and just see what the savings is. So they're required to tell you how much you'll save, including your fees. And if you can be, let's say, 2.875%, right?
Right.
Because it's even better, your amount that you pay is going to go down. You're only going to look even better. So I think that it's worth having the conversation.
Okay.
And I'd love to know what you wind up doing. But that's how I would figure it out. You're trying to save money, but have the same number of payments or pay off the loan in 6 years, for example. Like, could you get a 10-year amortization but really get the loan paid off in 6 years? Now you're saving a year or two of payments. That's really valuable.
All right, I'll do that. I just figured today my lenders would not want to talk to me because I'm really not a good candidate for a long-term.
Why are you not a good candidate?
Well, they want to make money for the long term. I want to reduce my pay.
They'll be happy to talk to you.
Oh, okay.
They will. And if they aren't, there are all kinds of other lenders that would rather have your business. Because if you have good credit, you've got plenty of equity in the house, and you've got enough cash to do the deal, they would love to talk to you, really. Mortgage lending is down, and that is, you know, one reason that you're seeing just a low, low number of people who are able to qualify. If you can qualify, there are lots of people who are going to want your business.
So now you just
have to negotiate the very best deal you can. And what I would do is try and get like a 3% 10-year loan. Almost no closing costs. Try to pay $2,000 or less in closing costs, and then see, have them factor for you how much you'll save over just paying off the loan the way you have it.
Okay.
All right?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, Jim. Let me know what happens, okay? 46 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Michael joins us on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Elise. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Two-part question. Number one, my daughter's moving up to Washington for a great job. She's going to be there a minimum of 3 years, probably maximum 5 years. Wants to buy a condo. The market in Washington, D.C. seems to be pretty stable. Hasn't gone down that much. The question is, do you think that for that period of time, buying versus renting is a good idea?
3 years is a really short period of time. So I would say no. Unless she's going to have a roommate and it's going to defray the costs, and then she's just going to pay a lot less than she would pay to rent.
Okay. How about if it were 5 years? If she, you know...
But you don't know it's going to be 5 years.
That's true. But the rental market in Washington is unbelievable. You know, if she were to buy the condo and rent it, it's rented in a day. So,
okay, well, that's today. That's not in 3 years. I'll tell you, if she's going to buy something, I'd like to see her buy more than a one-bedroom, one-bath.
Uh-huh.
I'd rather see her buy a two-bedroom, two-bath, or two-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath. And I'd like to see her try and take advantage of, you know, the best that she can buy, because that gives her options. If she ends up having a roommate, it can defray costs, or when she goes to turn it around and rent it in 3 years, she'll have better luck. I do love that mortgage interest rates are so low right now for her.
Uh-huh.
And Washington is stable. That's because the government has lots of people who work for it.
For sure.
And that isn't going away anytime soon, no matter what. You know, the Tea Party says we're still going to have people in a federal government, and they're still going to live in Washington, D.C.
If she were to make a five-year commitment there, would a 7-1 ARM be better than a 30-year fixed right now?
No. Go with a 30-year fixed.
Okay.
Really. I mean, these rates are unbelievably low. It is not worth the risk that she might want to keep it as an investment property in 5 years, and now you've got a 7-year that's expiring, and what are you going to do because interest rates have jumped up?
Okay.
So it's not worth the risk. If she can go and move there, owner-occupied unit, 4.25% for a 30-year fixed, I mean, think about that. My interest rate for the very first place I ever bought in 1989 was 11.75%.
Yeah, mine was 12 or 13.
So, so this is insanely low. We have to keep this in perspective. I think people forget this all the time. They're like, oh, but I could get 3.75%, or I could get 3% on a 7-1 ARM. But the difference in price between the 4% and the 3% loan at this rate is very low. It's very nominal.
Got it. Okay.
All right.
Great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Michael. Good luck to your daughter. It is 50 minutes past the hour on the Elise Kling Show. We have a prize pack coming up next hour that we're going to give away. And don't forget to check out today's Atlanta Journal-Constitution. There is a special report on the dangers lurking at your kids' daycare center. So if you've got little kids, this is something that you're absolutely going to want to check out. It's 10 before the hour on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750, online all the time at thinklink.com. Let's go back to the phones. Barbara joins us on the line. Hey, Barbara, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. The reason I was calling was having to do with selling or otherwise getting rid of a timeshare that my husband and I bought in 1984.
Wow.
We only paid $6,000 for it then, but since then, in all the annual maintenance fees, we've paid for it many times over, and we don't use it anymore, and we're less inclined to travel. So what I'm trying to find out is what my options are, and I've already checked your website and found your articles on the topic. There were three articles that I thought were very good, and the most recent being in February of this year. I guess what I'm struggling with is whether or not I would need to have an attorney if I wanted to try to deed the timeshare back to the current owner of the resort.
Well, have you spoken to the current owner of the resort?
I have not yet done so, no, but it's something that I wanted to try and do. Another complication is that the resort was recently sold. That was back in January, so now it's a new owner, and the servicing company that used to handle billing and title changes is no longer in the picture anymore. So I'm having a little trouble putting it all together, but I'm on the road to doing that.
Okay, so the first thing to do is contact the new company and find out exactly who you have to work with to get this thing sold. Oftentimes they will lease it out or they will sell it. So that might be one way to go. You also want to get all the details and the information so when you make your payment, you're sending it to the right place. So that would be a first place to start. Try and find out if they are selling, if they have a leasing arm or a sales arm, how many units are for sale, what they think that you'll be able to get for it, if anything. And usually they like to handle this stuff in-house. They make a commission on it, which you'll gladly pay because then you don't have to make any of your other payments.
True.
The other thing that you can do is you can try to unload it. And you can unload it either on Craigslist, eBay. You can just post a website for it. You can sign up and do a listing on any one of the not for sale by owner sites, but I would do one of the rental ones, like VRBO, Vacation Rentals by Owner, try and do it there. And then also contacting other owners, or if you do go down or send a child or somebody down there, putting notes under the other doors or contacting some of the other owners that you want to sell, that's another way to do it. But I think that the articles that we haven't written more recently about it because nothing's changed, you need to get more information before you can make a really smart decision about unloading this property. So start with the new owner and see how receptive they are. And if not, you can always hire a real estate attorney as a second step. 59 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Loads of information up at thinkglink.com. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We have a whole other hour on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
7 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Welcome to hour two of today's program. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com. Today we've been talking about how mortgage interest rates hit an all-time record low again, so get out there and refinance. Bank of America announced a $5 per month fee for almost all of their 37.8 million customers who have debit cards. We walked through some of the different fees that banks are associating with. So there's lots more to talk about there as well. Back on the, over abroad, Greece, the whole Greece situation didn't make much progress this week. And I think what we saw is a tremendous amount of volatility in the stock market as anybody tries to figure out anything, right? So it's a little bit of a concern when you have the Greek cabinet trying to approve a contentious plan, that's what they're doing today, to lay off state workers, sign off a draft of next year's budget, try to slash spending, free up the bailout loans. I mean, there's so much going on over there. I think that investors are clearly just throwing money at the wind, hoping it works. As the Alan Abelson, as you know, is one of my very favorite columnists over at Barron's, said this week, when it comes to investing in the stock market, every place looks terrible. Just make sure there's water in the pool before you dive in. I think it's absolutely tremendous. And then finally, we saw yesterday 700 people squared off on the Brooklyn Bridge during an Occupy Wall Street march. And the Wall Street protesters mostly have now been released. Cops are saying, we told them we were going to do it. They were, you know, but they were having a peaceful march. They were just on the Brooklyn Bridge and basically brought that bridge to a halt. The total number of people who've been arrested in the past 2 weeks from the Occupy Wall Street, that's the name of it, by the way, is almost 1,000. That number is substantially more than the number of financiers who led the world into the 2008 economic meltdown. People are getting very upset. And it's interesting to see how the world is going to react to it. One report I read this morning said that Wall Street is gearing up to fight Elizabeth Warren's nomination and petition to be elected a senator from Massachusetts. They're so mad at her consumer-friendly stance. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. So there were also demonstrations that took place, this Occupy Wall Street organization, in Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston, Denver, D.C. So there was certainly, there's something interesting starting to happen. People are getting very, very, very upset. And I think we're just going to have to watch what happens here. And certainly as, you know, the idea of a protest is one way to start getting our leaders in Washington refocused. We're heading into a presidential election year, and they're going to be watching to see what their supporters are saying. So if you want to stand up and be counted, protests are one way to do it, and that's what this organization is doing. They're willing to be arrested on a disorderly conduct charge as long as they can and get their voices heard. And people are very, very angry about what's been happening in the financial markets. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. John joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you doing, Elyse?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Great. I am looking for some guidance from you. I am considering relocating my family to Southwest Florida. So I have a two-part question now. Is now the right time to consider buying property in Southwest Florida? And two, is now the right time for me to consider selling my house in Cumming or trying to rent the house?
Well, you know, this is, you're going from a low market to another low market. It depends where in Southwest Florida you're going. I don't keep tabs on street by street, so I can't tell you on a very localized level if it's a good time to sell or buy. But I can tell you that Atlanta's property prices have dived about 35-38%. And property prices are now back to where they were in 1998 to 1999 or even earlier. Southwest Florida has seen an even bigger drop in some markets on the west southwest side. But if you were in Naples, the price point is significantly higher than if you're in a smaller town. So wherever you go and whatever you're buying, you want to buy it at a really low price and you want to plan to stay there a while. Does that help?
that helps. And my next question would be, in terms of trying to pinpoint actual locations, I want to take cost into factor in school systems, and I'm having a struggling a little bit to find really solid resources for getting this information.
So one of the best places to go for information about school districts is a website called schoolmatch.com. So schoolmatch.com, it's been around, I don't know, I want to say 10 or 15 years. And what they do is school research. They have a data consulting service. You can order a report card for different schools. They offer all kinds of different services, and they'll help you actually. What they'll do is, for a fee, they will evaluate your children and their strengths and their weaknesses and all that, and then they will match you up with a school district. There are a number of organizations that do this. They're one of them. I've known about them for a very long time.
Okay.
The other place that you can go is to the state of Florida Department of Education. And they will give you the rankings on every single school district in wherever you want in Florida. They have them all. I don't know if they're online because I haven't looked at the Florida one. You may want to just poke around. You know, it's Sunday, so you just poke around a little bit online and see. But the Department of Education would have, not rankings, but they look at all the different test scores and the results and which school districts rank the highest that way. And you can start to see that kind of information.
Okay, great.
All right, and then in terms of selling, you know, if you can get it sold, sell it. Get rid of it, even if you're going to take a little bit of a loss. Because as we said last hour, if you are selling low, you're also buying lower, even lower. So if you're buying a bigger house in a different place and you get a 35% discount and you're selling your house at a 35% discount, but your house is worth less than that house, moving now is a better deal, especially if you're going to stay there for 5 or 10 years.
Okay. Great. This is all very helpful information. Just out of curiosity, how would someone in my situation determine when does it make sense to rent the house as opposed to selling it for a loss?
I would talk to some local brokers who actually do local rentals and see how quickly they're able to rent a property of your size and how much they're able to get for it in your neighborhood. And I talked to a couple of different people. You can also talk to some property management companies. You know, we had a caller earlier from somebody whose daughter's moving to D.C. and their property's renting in a day. Well, in coming, that's probably not happening. Maybe it's taking a couple of weeks or a couple of months to rent. Maybe you're not getting enough to pay the mortgage. If that's the case, take the loss, sell the property, move forward.
Gotcha.
All right, but you're going to have to run the numbers once you know a little bit more specifically about what they're getting. Now, if you can get $1,000 a month rent and that covers your expenses, then you might want to do that for the next 5 years. But remember, with renters, you're going to have to maintain the property. You're going to be in Florida. You're not going to be here to manage it. Somebody's going to have to manage it, make sure the rent gets collected. You know, at 3 in the morning when the roof leaks, somebody's going to have to send somebody out and fix it. You know, being a landlord's not for everybody.
Right.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lisa. I appreciate all the information.
You're welcome, John. Have a great Sunday. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Robert joins us on the line from Decatur. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm good. Listen, I have a question. I have I do not pay PMI right now because I'm under, you know, 80% loan to value. Mm-hmm. But that's because I have a second mortgage. So if I refinance, I think I'd be like at 90%. And so I'm kind of wondering, one, about appraisals. I've heard that's a problem.
It is.
And two, when I start paying PMI, is that going to negate any savings I have on interest? And three, are there legitimate mortgage brokers these days, and how do I find them?
Yes, there are plenty of legitimate mortgage brokers these days. You can always look at a credit union, you can always look at a regional bank, and you can look at the big banks. You just want to walk in and talk to somebody face-to-face. Appraisals are real problematic right now, especially it just depends where you live in Atlanta and really what block you live on and how many foreclosures you have on your block. And you really want to step outside and go peruse your neighborhood, maybe a half a mile in any direction, and sort of count the foreclosures because, or if you're in a community, count the foreclosures because that's going to have a direct impact on what your appraisal comes back at. Now, you're correct. With your second mortgage, 90%, you can get an FHA loan. You will pay private mortgage insurance, and that could raise your price $100 to $200 a month, and it would totally negate any savings that you have. I would much rather see you work hard at paying off the second mortgage. How much do you have left on it?
It's probably about $16,000, so it's not that big of a deal. But I don't know that I'd be able to pay it off in a really short period of time. I don't know what the interest rates will do a year or two from now. I mean, it's just,
well,
that's kind of a window. But
I don't think that mortgage interest rates are going anywhere for at least another year.
Okay.
So if you could figure out a way to get that $15,000 paid off, you know, over the course of the next year, that's a good thing to do.
Okay.
And in the meantime, what's your interest rate at?
I think I'm around 5.25, 5.5.
Yeah, it would be nice to get rid of it, but you won't be able to get the second lender to do anything. So I think probably your best bet is to figure out a way to pay off the $15,000 and then refinance as soon as you can on the other. And that's probably going to be the best way to go. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Andy joins us on the line from Fayetteville. Hey, Andy.
How are you?
I'm having a great Sunday. What about you? Enjoying the weather out there?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. What's on your mind?
I had a question. My son just turned 8 a few weeks ago.
Okay. Happy birthday to him.
Basically, over the last 8 years, you know, Christmases, his birthday, he's accumulated about $4,000 we have in a savings account. I'm just wondering where I need to put that for him so we can make a big punch out of it.
Well, I don't know if you're going to make a big punch out of anything these days, but I love the idea that you've already accumulated $4,000. That's, you know, you're running at a rate of about $500 a year, and I love that. So you could open up an account for him, a 529 college savings plan. The Georgia plan is a pretty good plan. There's a website called savingforcollege.com, and I'll put that up on my website today so you can link that and link to it so you don't have to worry about writing it down while you're driving. But at savingforcollege.com, they look at 529 college savings plans, and they help you compare them.
So hey, one more question.
Sure.
What are 10-year mortgage rates at now?
I think the 10-year mortgage rate is somewhere around 3%, or maybe a little bit lower than that. I think I might have seen a 2.875%, but then you get other things that add into that.
So if I'm at 5 7/8 for about, I think about 11 years left of my term, would it be worth me going down to a 10 now?
Did you have a 15-year to begin with?
Say again?
Did you have a 15-year loan to begin with?
Yes, ma'am.
I think it would absolutely be worthwhile. Absolutely, because if you can shave that a year off of it and you end up in a situation where you're just paying less overall, I think that's good. How much? Let me calculate it for you right now. How much money do you have left on your loan?
Right at $72,000.
Okay. And let's say you could just get 3%, right? And 10 years. Your monthly payment, let me calculate that for you. Your monthly payment would be $695, not including the taxes and insurance.
Yeah, you probably have to add about $250 for that.
Okay.
Property taxes and insurance.
So you're looking at under $1,000. What is your current payment?
Like 1,090 or something like that.
So you could shave $100 off of what you're paying, and you've shaved a year off of the payment term. So that's a year's worth of payments that you've saved. I think it's an absolute yes.
Okay, even if I have some closing costs and stuff?
What we did is we factored it in at 3% instead of, let's say, 2.875 or 2.3, you know, 2.75%, which is probably closer to where the true is. We went up a little bit. So I factored in that you would, you know, do this with as few closing costs out of pocket as possible, and you take a slightly higher interest rate. So maybe you should look for paying out of pocket $1,500 to $2,000.
Okay.
But when you save $12,000, which is what you would save just in that 1 year of payments, paying $2,000 for costs that you can write off doesn't seem so bad to me.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We have a prize pack to give away next on News Talk WSB.
Expert money. advice you can depend on. Weekdays with Clark Howard and Dave Ramsey, and midday every Sunday with Elise Glick on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
27 minutes past the hour. Time for our WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack. The prize value this week, $325. It includes a pair of tickets to see Atlanta Symphony Orchestra's Ravel and Frank concert on October 6th at Atlanta Symphony Hall, a Marlowe's Tavern $100 gift certificate, an Auto Bell Car Wash $25 gift card, and a family four-pack of tickets to the Great Georgia Air Show, October 8th and 9th at Falcon Field in Peachtree City. Awesome. What a great prize pack. And it can all be yours if you are the fifth caller at 404-741-0750. Be nice to Fred. He's taking your calls today. All right, it is 28 minutes past the hour. Coming up, we have a whole bunch of people who want to talk about refinancing, putting money away for their grandkids, what to do with a 30-year mortgage. You're 4 years in, you've got $264,000 owed, and you are upside down. We're going to answer all of those questions and perhaps a few others coming back in a couple of minutes. Don't forget to check out today's show notes, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com, and sign up for the free weekly newsletter while you're there. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned for more 404-872-0750 on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
37 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Last night we went to see Moneyball, the new Brad Pitt movie, and it was interesting. A friend of mine who's a big sports buff said he couldn't wait to go, because he's totally a sports buff, but his wife couldn't wait to go to see Brad Pitt. I have to say, it was a phenomenal movie. If you haven't seen Moneyball, it's great. We took Michael and Alex, our two kids. Alex, who's just thought the movie was great, but really wished they had more on the math, because he's a math kid, and he thought that was really interesting, how you could use statistics to change the world. And Michael, who's a sports nut, thought it was just a great sports movie, also liked some of the math and how they used it. And it's just kind of interesting, you know, how you can change. And this happened only, in the past 10 years. This was 2001 and 2002, that Billy Beane actually used sort of a kid who was 25 and graduated from Yale with a degree in economics, who had never really had a job, made him the assistant GM, and how they went out and they changed how baseball is actually played and how the economics of the sport are actually played. It's kind of interesting. Maybe someday there'll be a Nobel Prize in it for the kid who did it. But, you know, when you think about money and economics and statistics, you know, math is just incredibly important. It's incredibly important for what we do, right? Because every day, as the CEO of your own house and your own household and your household finances, you got to think about the liabilities and the assets and what you're actually doing with your money. You've got retirement savings to plan for and to help grow, and just having a basic understanding of math. It doesn't have to be fancy. You don't have to do quantum mechanics or whatever the heck those things are. You don't have to do any of that to be a proper steward of your own finances. But what you do need is a pretty darn good grasp on addition and subtraction, multiplication and division, and you need to know what websites to trust so they can use the calculators you're provided to make smart decisions. So for today's show, I've spent some time doing live online stuff at eLoan, but you can also go to thinklink.com and click on the tools. We have a load of tools there. These help you calculate whether or not you should refinance, whether or not how much your loan is going to be when you get it redone with different interest rates. It allows you to play around. You don't have to do the math behind it, but you have to understand enough to be able to use the calculator properly. So boning up a little bit on your math can only help your household finances, and I want to encourage you to do that. And then finally, just another thing to look out for this week. We've got all kinds of payroll information and unemployment news coming out. The economists, who have been completely wrong the last, 3 months straight, are predicting that we had employment climb by about 50,000 workers in September after no change in August. And the Labor Department data is going to come out on October 7th, so the end of the week for that. Factories, however, are growing at the slowest pace since July of 2009. That is right after the recession officially ended. And we're going to see what the survey of purchasing managers shows tomorrow. So that's Monday. We're also seeing just overall, the economists are predicting that the unemployment rate is unchanged in September, 9.1%. For the third month, and they think that there will be an improvement, though, for September. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm not really sure. I'm certainly feeling a little bit negative again about the unemployment situation if we do end up in another recession. 404-872-0750. It is 40 minutes past the hour. Barry joins us on the line from Greensboro. Hi, Barry.
Hi.
What's on your mind today?
My wife's mother passed away in May in Pennsylvania, and we're just trying to find out, well, it was taxed already as an inheritance tax by Pennsylvania.
Okay.
We're trying to find out how it will affect the...
That was pretty fast, by the way. Did you file your return yet?
Her brother's kind of taking care of things more.
Okay.
I don't know all the details, but he probably did that.
Okay.
The part that her and her brother are receiving, we're trying to find out what the income tax implications will be.
Well, you wouldn't pay any income tax on just general inheritance. But if it's in a, let's say she passed down an IRA, conventional IRA or a 401k or, you know, some sort of qualified retirement plan that had money in it, and let's say your wife got that. She and her brother may share it, and then you have to roll it into an inherited IRA. And as you take out money from there, you'll pay a portion of that in taxes because that money was tax-deferred, tax-deductible, tax-deferred.
Okay.
But if you just get $200,000 out of the estate and any estate taxes that were owed were already paid, you shouldn't have any income tax liability on that.
Okay, yeah, that's what I've been able to search for online. I was just trying to confirm that. And then she is, part of it is the retirement account, which I've also kind of figured that's going to be taxed based on the fact that it was pre-tax.
Yeah, but that's money. I mean, it's not like you're going to have to come up out of your own pocket with that. As you'll have she'll have 5 years to withdraw that money or draw it down, or she can take it all at once, and then out of that, you'll pay a portion of it.
Okay, so it'll be like a regular tax, like it was in your paycheck. I mean, you get you get federal, state, and
yep,
everything. Okay.
Yeah, you have to pay the regular federal and state taxes on that.
Okay.
But do you have to pay FICA and Medicare? I don't think so. This is investment money.
All right.
All right, is there anything else?
That'll do it. I appreciate you.
All right, good luck, and I hope you guys use it to do something good for yourselves. Celebrate your mother-in-law's life. 404-872-0750. Melanie joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Melanie.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And first I want to thank you so much because I had emailed you back at the beginning of the year when you were having your foreclosure event in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I had told you in my email that I just really need to attend this because I was trying to purchase my granddad's property at Lake Lanier, but he had bought in the 50s. And you were so gracious. You guys set me up with the tickets, and then I couldn't go. But what I wanted to tell you, though, is the good news to that is that we were able to purchase the house anyway.
Well,
and we
good
did
for
so
you.
At foreclosure with all of your guidance and reading your, you know, on your blogs and so forth. And so just wanted to fill you in on that.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that it all worked out and you were able to get it.
It did. We're just so thrilled. But I just wanted to tell you that we're now looking at, we have a home equity, a HELOC on it.
Uh-huh.
And so now. Now, and of course, it's at a good rate now, but now we're trying to figure out what we should do. We don't live in the house. We own our own house, and this is just a secondary house for us.
Yep.
And we're just trying to figure out, we want to convert, you know, to take advantage of these low fees, but my goodness, the closing costs and the fees are so high, even through the credit union and our local community bank. We're just trying to figure out if you have any advice.
How much are the fees?
Oh my gosh, they're like $6,000 to $7,000.
That's ridiculous.
I know, and that's
and what's
most.
How much is the home equity line of credit for?
It's about $196,000.
Okay, and what's
we own our house free and clear. So
what's the property worth?
Oh, the property's worth probably, at this market, probably about $400.
Okay, and... Okay, and what, okay, so you've now looked into getting a mortgage for the property, and what's the interest rate you're paying on your HELOC? It's probably around
2-3%. It's pretty low, and I'm sorry, I don't have that exact.
That's okay.
But it's
all right.
Pretty low.
So one option that you have is if you're not, if it's a second home and that's a problem for lenders, get the loan on your primary residence.
Uh-huh.
And then pay off the home equity loan with that. You may pay less in fees and a lower interest rate because it's the owner-occupied one.
Right.
But it is a cash-out refinance because you own your house outright.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is just continue to shop around and try and take a slightly higher interest rate.
Uh-huh.
So instead of getting 3% on a 15-year or 3.5%, maybe you take 4% on a 15-year.
Okay.
And you lock it in. And maybe you get a little bit lower costs. Maybe you can get those down to $2,000 if you agree to take a slightly higher interest rate.
Okay.
So start talking about that with different lenders. If you have great credit, you've got plenty of equity in the house, you've got cash on hand, shouldn't be much of a problem.
Okay. All right. Great. Great advice.
All right.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. And thanks for the update on your grandfather's place. I actually do remember you, and I remember this story, and I'm so glad to know that it all worked out okay, and you were able to keep your granddad's property in the family. That's very special. 404-872-0750. Let's go on. Kenny joins us on the line. Hi, Kenny.
Five grandchildren, Al, about 2 and 3, and I'd like to put maybe $1,000 in each one of them, some kind of account that can't be touched for, say, 20 or 25 years. And if I don't put any more in, how much will that $1,000 be worth when they get that old?
All right. So let's recap. You have five grandkids, you want to put $1,000 away for each of them, and you don't want them to touch it for 25 years?
I don't want their parents to touch it, so yeah, that's right.
Okay. Okay, so one thing that you could do is you can open up a 529 college savings plan for each one, each grandkid.
Okay.
And you can put it in their name. Parents would not be able to withdraw the money except for qualified educational expenses. And that's one way to do it, because otherwise they'll pay tax on the money. And you can go to savingforcollege.com, or if you're, are you driving?
Yes.
Okay, don't do it now while you're driving.
Okay.
I will put a link on my website up to savingforcollege.com. You can evaluate the different options, but it'll probably be best to just do it in the state that each kid lives in. So if they all live in Georgia, do it in the Georgia one. And it's one account for each one. They won't be able to make use of it. But at 18, when they go off to college, then they'll be able to use some of that money for those qualified expenses. Now, if you don't want them to touch it at all, then you have to open up a trust. But honestly, for $1,000, it's not going to be worth it, because you would need to pay for five trusts, and each trust could cost you $500 to $2,000. So that's just not economically feasible for $1,000 each.
Okay, I plan on adding to it, but just say I don't add to it, what would that interest be?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what you invested in. I mean, honestly, if you just left it in, you know, like a 1%, it would not be worth very much more than it is right now in 25 years. If you find an investment and it grows, let's say you put it into a solid company that pays a dividend, I mean, nobody knows, because it depends on what kind of investment you put it in and how those investments do. Right now, my husband Sam just referred to the stock market as a bunch of gamblers, because it's so volatile, you really don't know where things are going. But what I would suggest is that you open it up in a place where you can have index mutual funds, which are really cheap. So that would mean Fidelity or Vanguard. And I would just put half of it into the S&P 500 index fund, which is like 0.1% for costs at Fidelity. And I'd put 20% into an international index fund that has all of the whole world, and then the rest into a total bond market fund. And that's what I would do for each kid, and I would just let it grow over the years. So it's in an after-tax account, so they would pay tax on the earnings over the years, but you'd probably have a better growth rate. Now, if you put it into a 529 plan, those investments will be chosen for you. And the risk factor is based on the age of the kids. So I think it's really important to kind of think about where you want the money to go, if you don't want the kids' parents to touch it, you can put just your name on and the kids' names on, and then when you die, the kid would inherit that account entirely. And you probably, since you got five grandkids and you're doing this five times over, probably want to buy a couple of hours of time of a great estate attorney just to make sure you are thinking about it in the right way. It's 50 minutes past the hour. Don't forget to check out the latest edition of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Today's AJC has a special report that exposes the dangers lurking at your kids' daycare center. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and new to guide you through your money and real estate questions only on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
The hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. You've been listening to the Elise Glink Show. It's been a great show. Coming up next, we've got just a packed schedule. Our good friend Dave Baker is in today with the Home Fix It Show. He's got an hour. And then we've got our weekly checkup with Bruce Feinberg. Adam Goldfein is in at 4, and Mel Robbins is on at 6. Alan Hunt is on at 7. Wow, it's a packed schedule. But, you know, you can always end the day with Kim Komando, 9 to midnight. She's so great. Here on News Talk WSB. There's just, you know, unfortunately, I don't think we're going to get to any more calls today, but I want to invite everybody who's still holding to email me at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com, and I will try to answer your questions this week or have somebody who can answer them for you. It's been a great show. We have on that I'm going to be finishing on show notes for today, schoolmatch.com. So if you're looking for a new school district, how to go finding it, and then how to and where the link is for eLoan, savingforcollege.com, all those great questions about putting money away for kids so it'll be there when they get older, ready for college. Savingforcollege.com is going to be the place to go and look for that as well. Plus, we've got all kinds of economic news and links to the five refinancing mistakes you don't want to make. I really don't want you to make them. What I do want is for you to have an easy refinance. All right, the music is playing. That means our time is up. It's a beautiful day in Atlanta. Go out and enjoy it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week on News Talk WSB. Have a great week, everybody.